Okay. We are holding on Mem Omid Beis. Check that. Mem Aleph Omid Beis. Five lines from the bottom. We started discussing yesterday, the Mishnah had told us that if you have a kettle that had been on the stove with hot water in it, so we said if pinahu, which we said there's two possibilities what pinahu means, either it means that you emptied out the hot water, or it means you took it off the stove and emptied out the hot water, or it just means that you took it off the stove, but it still has the hot water in it, then the Mishnah said you're not allowed to put in cold water in order for it to heat up, because that would be mavashal on Shabbos, but you are allowed to put in water in it in order to thaw it, in order to make it lukewarm. So we discussed what does the Mishnah mean by that. We have two explanations. We had Rav Ada bar Masna's explanation that what we mean is once you emptied out the hot water, you can't put in a little bit of cold water because that will then the heat that the kettle still has from having been on the fire will heat up that water to the point of yadzel adisloy. But you'd be allowed to pour in a lot of cold water where all that's going to do is make that cold water lukewarm. It might be that you're going to be strengthening the metal of the container after it went through heat. You put it into cold water and that strengthens the metal, and that would be also on Shabbos. There is a bit of discussion, by the way, whether it's Daraita or Darabanan, but whatever, it would be also. And the answer is that according to Rav Shimon, that says Dovah Shein Meskaven is Mutter, then that would be fine. You're not necessarily going to be strengthening the metal because not necessarily did it reach that temperature in the first place, and even if it did, it may previously have been strengthened during the manufacturing process or during some previous time when you heated it up and then poured cold water in, whatever, and therefore not necessarily now are you going to be mitzaris. So therefore, so Rav Shimon would say that's allowed. It's not necessary. It's not a psychoration, and it's Dovah Shein Meskaven. That was his explanation. That was Rav Ada bar Masna's explanation. Then we had Abaye's explanation that no, the Mishnah means where you took the kettle off the fire, but it still has hot water in it. So the same idea, you can't put in a little bit of cold water because then it'll be warmed up by the existing hot water in there and become yatzel adisloy. But you are allowed to put in a lot of cold water because all that's going to happen is it's all going to become lukewarm. But Abaye says if the kettle was completely empty, then you can't put in water at all because then you're going to be doing this mitzaris thing. According to Rashi, it would be talking about specifically you can't fill it up all the way to the brim with cold water because Rashi learns that that's how mitzaris would be accomplished. And Tosfos says not necessarily. It could even mean you put in less than that. You put in some amount of cold water and it helps to strengthen the metal. Okay. So now we're going to continue on the topic of that discussion.
If you have steel, there's no strengthening. So what's the halacha?
Well, first of all, I don't know. Steel also is subject to the same process. And the fact of the matter is, when they make steel, they do the same kind of thing, right? First, they make it with heat, and then they quench it. Then they quench it with cold in order to strengthen it. So it may not be. I mean, the only difference might be that with a steel pot, let's say, maybe it's not. It's much less likely to reach a temperature where it actually weakens the metal. So fine, if we say according to Rav Shimon, and listen, we discussed before, is the halacha like Rav Shimon as far as Dovah Shein Meskaven or not? We said the halacha is like Rav Shimon. That we said, for example, that somebody trying to call in.
No.
Okay, Ellie, you still there? I think we might have lost Ellie. Try him. Okay. I don't know if I thought I heard somebody trying to dial in. Okay. All right. So we said the halacha is like Rav Shimon. Dovah Shein Meskaven is Mutter. That's why we said, for example, you're allowed to drag a bench on Shabbos on ground as long as it's not yatzel adisloy. So the halacha in the end would be that even if you put cold water into it, as long as it's not necessarily going to be mitzaris, then it would be allowed. So you're talking about a steel pot. Okay, same idea. Then in that case, there'd be even more reason to be masculine because it's much less likely that you're going to be mitzaref at all. Continuing on that topic, we have a similar machloikus on this. Omar Rav, lo shanu elo lahashir. This that we said that you're allowed to put in water into the kettle, cold water, is only if you're going to do it in order to make it lukewarm. Avalatzaris also, but if you're putting in the water into there into an empty kettle, and you want to be mitzadeh, you want to strengthen the metal, then it would be osur, which would basically be like what Abaye was saying, that our Mishnah is not allowing you to put hot water and is not allowing you to put water, cold water into an empty kettle, just into one that already has water, as long as you're putting in enough cold water that the whole thing is never going to get kiyabsil out of it, right? Well, Shmuel amar ki lo tzaref nami mutter. Whereas Shmuel would say that it would be allowed even if you're doing it with tzaref, even if you're doing it in order to strengthen the metal. The question is, why is Shmuel the way Shmuel is saying it? What do you mean? Tzaref amar ki lo tzari? What do you mean? You're for sure not allowed to do tziruf. You're for sure not allowed to intend to put the water in there in order to do tziruf. Even Rav Adar bar Masna is only saying that if you put in the water and accidentally tziruf is done, then fine, because davar sheni miskaven. Even he's not saying that you're lachatchila allowed to do that. So what is Shmuel saying? Ella, rather, if this was said, it was said like this. We have to correct the wording of the machlokes a little bit. Amar Rav leishanu ella shir lachshir. Rav says that when are you allowed to put in cold water? Only if you're putting in enough cold water that it would be able to, that's only going to become lukewarm. That's not going to become yad saladis, right? Aval shir l'tzarif also. But if you put in there the amount of water that would be enough l'tzarif, then it would be also. Which again, Rashi would say if you fill it up to the brim, then it would be also, because like Abaye's saying, like Abaye's understanding of the Mishnah, we're going according to the Yehuda, Dava She'en Miskaven is Osir. Therefore, even though you don't intend to do Tziruf, the fact that you're filling it up enough that it could accomplish Tziruf, if the pot needs it, would be Osir, rather saying. According to Tosfos, it would be you're putting in even a smaller amount of water, because according to Tosfos, you don't even necessarily need it to be filled up to the brim in order to be Mitzara, but whatever. So that would be Rav. Whereas Shmuel would say you could put in even enough, even if you're putting in the amount of water that would be able to accomplish tziruf. So as long as you don't mean to, because again, that would be according to Reb Shimon, that Dabar She'en Miskaven is Mutter.
So Shmuel's answer is what exactly?
Shmuel would be saying, according to Reb Shimon, Dabar She'en Miskaven is Mutter. So as long as you're not intending to do tziruf, then you're good. Even if you put in the amount of water that could accomplish tziruf, conceivably, if the kettle needed it, nevertheless it would still be mutter because you're not intending to.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Tosfos talks about that it's not necessarily that you need to fill it up to the brim in order to do it. Tosfos discusses that that we could be talking about whether you're intending to get the water lukewarm versus where you're intending to do tziruf, or even if you put in a smaller amount of water, it could accomplish tziruf. So whatever. So Shmuel would hold that even if you're putting in the amount of tziruf, as long as you don't intend to do tziruf, then you're okay, because Reb Shimon says that you're allowed to, and Shmuel is going according to Reb Shimon. So the question is, remember the Shmuel could Reb Shimon tziruf? Are you telling me that Shmuel agrees with Reb Shimon that Dava She'en Miskaven is Mutter? While Amar Shmuel, don't we find that Shmuel said, Mechabin Bachelas Shomatches B'Shus Arabim, suppose you have a coal, meaning a coal of metal, meaning a hot piece of metal in the street. The Shmuel says you're allowed to put that out on Shabbos, V'Shvil Shalo Yizayku B'Rabim, in order that the Rabim don't get harmed by it, because Rashi says, this hot piece of metal that we know that one of the 39 melachas is mechabe, is to put out a fire, but midaraisa, Rashi says, that only applies to things that actually burn. Metal doesn't actually burn. Therefore, Rashi says, in other words, to put it differently, wood starts out in one form and becomes something else. You burn a piece of wood, it becomes charcoal. As opposed to metal, you melt it or you heat it up or whatever, it's still just hot metal. It doesn't change to a different kind of substance. So therefore, the whole concept of saying that kibui should apply to a piece of hot metal would only be osur d'rabbanan, and Shmuel is saying suppose then you have such a thing in Rishus HaRabim, then you would be allowed to put it out on Shabbos in order that the Rabbim don't get harmed by it, because they're going to be walking by. They're not going to know that this piece of metal is hot, and they're going to get burnt by it. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to allow you to put it out in order to prevent the Rabbim from getting harmed. Aval lo gachelas shaleivam. But the same thing would not be true if it was a coal of wood, because there you have there it's an issur daraisa to put out to the coal, and therefore, so even now in this case, the malacha she'en tzricha legufa, because you're not putting it out for the same purpose that you did it in the Mishkan, which is Tosfos's definition of malacha she'en tzricha legufa. You're not putting it out because you want to be in the situation of putting it out and you want the result of it. You would rather that you weren't in that situation in the first place, which is Rashi and the other Rishonim definition of malacha she'en tzricha legufa. So the question is, the isaf gaidach stavolak Rav Shimon, if Shmuel held like Rav Shimon, afilu shel eitz nami, then the halacha should actually be allowed, the halacha should be that you'd actually be allowed to do it even with a coal made out of wood. Because either way, if malacha she'en tzricha legufa, so even if it was wood, where the concept of kibbuy applies to it daraisa, but in this case, you're doing it as malacha she'en tzricha legufa, and Rav Shimon holds that's allowed. If we assume that Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon, then we should allow you, then the Chachamim should allow you to do that for the same reason, because the Rabbin may be harmed by it. So that seems to show that Shmuel does not hold like Rav Shimon. And the answer is, the Gemara says very simple, it's two different machlokes. The Dava She'en Meskaven Savalak Rav Shimon, when it comes to the first question that we're dealing with, of Dava She'en Meskaven, where you're doing something where inadvertently a malacha may happen through it, for example, in the case of putting cold water into the kettle where you may do Mitzah, you may end up doing Mitzah, in that Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon. But the malacha she'en tzricha legufa, savalak Rabbi Yehuda. But when it comes to malacha she'en tzricha legufa, when it comes to you knowingly doing something, but you're not doing it for the purpose that it was done in the Mishkan, or you're not doing it for a constructive purpose, but rather because you have no choice, basically. But then in that, he holds like Rav Shimon. Those are two different machlokes, Rav Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. And Shmuel doesn't have to agree with Rav Shimon in both of them. Now, I mean, the question is, in that case, it's a fairly obvious thing. And what brought the Gemara even to think in the first place that there should be any comparison between them? I mean, they are completely unrelated machlokesim. So Tosfos says that maybe the Gemara thinks that after all there is a certain connection between them, because we would say Rav Yehuda would take a view malacha she'en tzricha legufa yuchayev. Therefore, he would say that would apply if you're intending to do something, but you're not doing it legufa. And he would say that the Chachamim maybe a machmer on it further and say that even if you didn't have the intention in the first place, then fine, the Chachamim are going to be machmer on you as well. Whereas Rav Shimon would disagree with that whole premise. So there could be a certain connection between the two machlokes, and therefore the Gemara thought. Therefore, the Gemara thought that maybe there is a connection between them.
So depending on who you side with, you could be chayev twice or once. Is that what you're saying?
No. Either way, he's only going to be chayev once. Let's, for example, in this case involving the coal of wood that's in the street, where again the concept of kibbuy applies to it on a daraisa level. So according to Rav Yehuda, even if, for example, you were doing something else which caused inadvertently that coal was being put out, Rav Yehuda would, and even though you accomplished by it that now the Rabbim are not going to get harmed by it, Rav Yehuda would still say that you're chayev chata. Whereas Rav Shimon would say, if you did it accidentally, you're not going to be chayev chata either way, because you're not going to be chayev chatas either way because it was if you did it as a side effect of something else, if you were doing something else and inadvertently the coal got put out, Rav Shimon would say you're potter because Davash Ainam is gathered. And also he would say, even if you're doing it deliberately, so you know that it's a coal and you know you're putting it out on Shabbos, but you're doing it for the sake of the Rabbin to prevent them from getting harmed, Rav Shimon would say you're also potter, because that would be malacha she'en tzricha legufa. So again, they are two different machlokesim, but nevertheless, the Gemara thought that there was a certain connection between them because, again, like Tosfos is saying, maybe the Chachamim would, maybe once Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's also, if it's Malach HaShem and Tzricha L'Gufa and you're doing it deliberately, then maybe the Chachamim would ask it, even if you did it inadvertently as a side effect of something else. The Ritva gives a different answer that since we had both of them, we learn them from a similar thing. The Torah tells us Malachas Machsheves also a Torah, but the Torah only answers the kind of Malacha that you were actually intending to do the Malacha. So therefore, in that sense, both Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa and Dover Shein and Miskaven both kind of fall under that. In both cases, you weren't intending to do the actual Malacha for the purpose that it was in the Mishkan. So therefore, the Gemara thought that there's a certain similarity between them, and therefore, the Gemara thought that if Shmuel agrees with Reb Shimon on one, then necessarily he has to agree with Reb Shimon on the other. And the Gemara is saying, there can be that connection, but nevertheless, Shmuel is entitled to pick and choose and say that the Halacha is like Reb Shimon in one of them and not the other. And by the way, you have a similar thing among the Rishonim. The Rambam passes like Reb Shimon about Dover Shein and Miskaven, that is mutter, but he passed things like Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa. The Rambam learns that even if you're doing the Malacha, not for the purpose for which it was being done in the Mishkan, nevertheless, you'd be chayev, as long as you're doing the actual Malacha itself, not that it happens as a side effect of something else. So we see that. The Rambam also, like the Gemara is saying, over here about Shmuel, agrees with Reb Shimon on one din and disagrees with him on the other one. Most of the other poskim disagree with the Rambam on that. By the way, they learn that the halacha is like Reb Shimon as far as Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa as well. And therefore, applying that to our Gemara over here, it would mean that even if it was a wooden coal, but if it was in the Reshus HaRabim and people are going to be harmed by it, and again, we're talking about there's no easy way to accomplish otherwise. You can't, let's say, for example, move it out of the way in order to prevent people from getting harmed by it. Then it brings in Shulchan Aruch. According to that, you would actually be able to put that out as well. Because it's only Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa. And again, according to Reb Shimon, such a thing would be allowed.
So the halacha in terms of Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa, what is it? Tzricha and Tzricha.
So the halacha is, according to the Rambam, Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa is Chayim, which is according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to many of the other Rishonim, the halacha is that Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa, you're potter for it, which is like Rabbi Shimon. Now, generally speaking, that doesn't necessarily cause a practical distinction most of the time anyway, because even Rabbi Shimon would agree that Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa is also the Rabbanim. But in a case like this, where you're dealing with a danger that's in Reshus HaRabim, then you would have the same machlokes that the Rambam would hold that since it's also d'oraisa, then you have no heter for it even in order to protect the Rabbim, whereas the other Rishonim would hold that since in this case it's in order to protect the Rabbim, then therefore the Chachamim would allow it. So it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Rebbe summarizes it in Shulchan Aruch that according to those who say that Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa is an Issur D'oraisa, then the only heter would be if it's Pikuach Nefesh, and this doesn't amount to Pikuach Nefesh, whereas according to the opinion that Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa is only D'rabbanan, then you would be able to do that in this case, you'd be able to put it out in Reshus HaRabim. The Rebbe says V'chein Issur, that is the primary a valid opinion in halacha that Malacha Shein and Tzricha L'Gufa is only d'rabbanan, and therefore that in a case like this it would be allowed to do it in order to protect the Rabbim. Although the Alter Rebbe finishes off that a Baal Nefesh should be careful and where possible and not do it, or have somebody else do it, or move it, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, less than 4 amos at a time or whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Amar Ravina. So in this connection, Ravina says Hilkach. Therefore, based on this din that we're saying about a coal of metal, or according to Reb Shimon, even a coal of wood that's in Reshus HaRabim, and putting it out in order to protect the Rabbim from getting harmed. Therefore, says Ravina, by the same token, Kosh Reshus HaRabim, if you have a thorn, a dangerous thorn in Reshus HaRabim, remember, people walk barefoot in those days mostly, so thorns in Reshus HaRabim could really hurt them. So Melichay, Kochas Midalat Amin. You would be allowed to move it less than 4 amos at a time, to the side of Reshus HaRabim, because again, to move things in Reshus HaRabim less than 4 amos at a time is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. And in this case, in order to protect the Rabbim, then we wouldn't be goyim on it. Or the Karmelis, if it's lying in Karmelis, then after the Tuvah, then you would be able to move it even more than you'd be allowed to move it as much as you want at a time, because again, the whole issue of carrying in a Carmelis is only the Rabbanan.
Carmelis again is an area that has
Carmelis is anything that's not a Rishus HaYachid and not a Rishus HaRabim and not a Makom Patur. So we gave examples of it. For example, you have a Rishus HaRabim, we said has to be a Rishus HaRabim, we said has to be 16 amos wide. It has to be not roofed. It has to be that, according to many Rishonim, it also has to be that 600,000 people pass through it every day. It has to go from one end of the city to the other, etc. So anything that doesn't meet those criteria would be a Carmelis. So, for example, a street that's narrower than 16 amos, or where all the streets in the city, let's say, are like that, or, for example, an open field, let's say you have an open field that people walk through, or different places like that, so all those kinds of things would be a Carmelis. So we say, according to there are many poskim who say that the average street in the average city is a Carmelis, and that's where you have the whole concept of being able to put up an Eruv, that we learned in the first Teref, but true Rosh Hashanah Abim, you can't just put an Eruv with a third of a Pesach around it, you would have to have actual doors. We're going to learn about that more in Eruv, in Bez Hashem. But you have many poskim who hold, that all streets in most cities nowadays are considered Carmelis, and therefore you can put up an Eruv. So what a Carmelis is exactly, there's a good deal of discussion. Again, part of it has to do with that question about the 600,000, whether you actually require 600,000 or whether you don't.
And the Rishus HaYachid?
The Rishus HaYachid, we said, is a place at least four by four amos and 10 trochim wide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's that. So we see, in other words, that there is a certain exception when it comes to, when I said it was just a yachin, I said four amos, I meant four tefachim. Sorry, four tefachim by four tefachim, 10 amos tall, 10 tefachim tall is a rishus yachin. 10 tefachim tall or 10 tefachim deep, we talked about it in the first paragraph. Okay. All right.
Four by ten tefachim.
Right. Okay. Next. The Gemara says, we said in the Mishnah Abel Noisin Chula, but we said you're not allowed to put cold water into the kettle which was taken off the fire. Again, according to the two explanations, that you can't put in cold water when there's already hot water in there, where the cold water is now going to get heated up by the hot water, or that it means you're not allowed to put in cold water into the empty hot kettle because it's going to get heated up. But we said Abel Noisin, but we said you're allowed to put cold water into the kettle or into a cup of hot water, in order to make it lukewarm, because then it's not going to reach the Abdullah display. So let's talk about that. And then in the course of that, we'll talk about what we were talking yesterday about Kutan, about what the deal with that is. So, Tanarabon, we learn in a Braisa, Noisin Adam Chamin L'Tzeichatzonin, B'loi Hatzonin L'Tzeichachamin Divrei Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says that when you're pouring one kind of water into the other, you're allowed to pour hot water into cold, but not cold water into hot, says Beis Shammai. Now, why not? Rashi says, there's a concept in halacha called tata'a gavar, which means the lower one is stronger. That comes up, for example, in the halacha of kashrut. If you have hot food, if you have a hot pot and something cold falls into it, so we say there's the heat rises and the hotter thing on bottom overpowers the cold thing that falls on top of it. Therefore, the cold thing also becomes hot. And let's say, so you're talking about basa b'cholov, you're talking about some other kind of thing like that where you have a problem with kashrus, then it's going to become chayim. As opposed to the other way around, if the thing on bottom was cold and you have something hot falls onto it, then you have much less of an issue because then you have, again, the cold thing cools off the hot thing that fell onto it, and therefore you have so only a small amount of the food is going to become after. So Rashi says, in the same sense, you have over here tata'a gavar. So what happens is when you have the hot water is in the container and then you're pouring cold water into it, what happens is that the hot water, which is on bottom, overpowers the cold water, which is being poured into it. Therefore, you have a problem. Therefore, it's going to actually cook it to the extent of Yad-Zohar, I suppose. As opposed to the Bishamah is saying, if you're pouring hot water into cold, then again, the cold water being on bottom overpowers the hot water because the general heat rises, and therefore, therefore the hot water gets cooled off, and therefore it doesn't become the outside of the stuff. That's Rashi's understanding. Tosfos has a problem with that because the Hillel is going to disagree with this, and we have this concept of Katar Gavar or not is actually Machlokes Amoraim elsewhere in Shas, in Tzachim, and in some other places. If you're going to say, as we're going to say in a second, that the Hillel disagrees with the Shammai and says you're allowed either way, then how could any Amoraim disagree with the Hillel? So therefore, Tosfos has a different understanding of it, which is that what we're talking about in general, when we talk about pouring one thing into another, usually what we mean is you're pouring the smaller thing into the larger one. That's usually how it is. When you talk about pouring from one container into another, usually you're pouring from the thing that has less in it into the one. Now, obviously, when you're filling an empty cup, but when you already have liquid in a cup, usually when you're pouring something else in, you're pouring a smaller amount of something else into the larger amount that's already there. Therefore, Tosfos says that's the difference. If you have a larger amount of hot water there, but Shammai is saying you have a problem because now you're pouring in a small amount of cold water and therefore it's going to get heated up. You have to satisfy. As opposed to if you have a large amount of cold water in there and you're pouring in just a little bit of hot water, because again, that's the implication of pouring hot into cold, then there's no problem because it's not going to reach you have to satisfy. Okay, so that's the Shammai. August to the Roman, Ben Chaman will say Chafonin or Ben Sonin will say Chachamin, Mutter. The Tillel says either way it's Mutter. It doesn't matter which one you're pouring into which one, because again, according to Rashi, the point is that the Tillel doesn't care about the Tar Gavar. They just care that the whole thing doesn't become Yad Tillel, so it doesn't matter. And according to Tosfos, same idea. In other words, it doesn't matter which one there's more of. It depends. It depends whether it's going to become Yad Tillel or not, which obviously is going to depend on the respective temperatures of the water that you're pouring. If you have a container of water at 212 degrees and you're pouring into it, and then you're pouring into it water at, let's say, 100 degrees, and obviously it's highly likely the whole thing is going to become Yad Tillel display, as opposed to if you pour in water at 40 degrees, then it's much less likely. Okay. And then the Braisa says, Reb Shimon ben Manasseh oser. Reb Shimon ben Manasseh says that oser. Now, what is Reb Shimon ben Manasseh referring to? That we're going to deal with soon in the Gemara. Which part of the Braisa he's referring to? Okay. So first of all, Rav Nachman says the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Manasseh, which we're going to discuss soon what exactly Rav Shimon ben Manasseh means. Okay. But first though, Sover Rav Yosef Lamema. Now, Rav Yosef thought to say in this connection, Seifo Harehu Ka'ambasi. Now, let's say, for example, you could be talking about, you have, let's say, a whole tub of hot water. And then you could be talking about, now, the tub, first of all, the tub has the hot water directly in it, therefore it's a clear ocean. The hot water was directly flowed into it from wherever it comes from, as opposed to a seifo means more like a cup or a bucket or something, a smaller container that you use for washing yourself, the way they would do it in those days. You'd go into the bathhouse, you'd have a whole tub full of hot water, a whole tub or pool or whatever, full of hot water, and then you'd take a smaller container, like a negelvaske cup or a bucket or something like that, and you'd pour the water over yourself while you're sitting in the bath. So that kind of thing is called a seifo. So Rav Yosef thought to say that the seifo, now the seifo is a cliche, and second of all, the seifo is a cliche, but on the other hand, now, the difference is like this. Okay, sorry. Let me back up a little bit. I actually skipped something in the Braisa. Let's go back to the Braisa. Sorry. Turn it up on. Noisanon chamlo sechafonin lo sonin lo sechacham and dibre b'shamay. B'shamay said you can pour hot water into cold, not cold into hot. Dibre b'shamay. Or b'shul on bein chamlo lo sechafonin or bein sonin lo sechacham and mutter. B'shul would say either way it's mutter, whether you're doing hot into cold or cold into hot. This is the part I skipped. B'med v'nom amurim b'kois. When is this talking about when you're pouring water into a cup, where a cup is a cliche, and also the water in the cup is not that hot, because after all, you want to drink it, so of necessity, you're not going to keep the water in there too hot. But when it comes to a tub of water, when it comes to a tub of hot water, then you're only allowed chamin l'secha chamin, like chamin l'secha chamin. Then you're only allowed to pour hot water into the cold. Again, according to Rashi, because then the cold of the tub will overpower the hot water that's being poured into it, because the cold is lower, or according to Tosfos, because it implies that you're pouring in less water than is currently in the tub, and therefore it's going to mix together and become lukewarm. So therefore, that would be mutter. But you wouldn't be allowed to pour cold into hot because you wouldn't be able to pour cold into hot because again we have to remember the tub is a klirishon, and if you pour cold water into a klirishon, then it's going to cook it, then it's going to heat it up. So it's going to heat it up to yam tova this way. Okay, and then we had the Rav Shimon ben Menachia. Oh, so Rav Shimon ben Menachia says it's also either way. Well, we don't know either way. We're going to have to figure out soon what Rav Shimon ben Menachem means. So first, Amar Rav Nachman, Allah Rav Shimon ben Menachem. Sober Rav Yosef, Amemar, Seifal, Harehu, Kambasi. Now, Rav Yosef thought to say like this. We talked about there's an ambasi, which is a tub, which has two stripes against it as far as pouring cold water into it, because number one, it's a klirishon, because the hot water was directly heated up in this tub, because again, as we looked the other day, they had holes in the floor of the bathhouse where the heat would come up from below and heat up the water in the tub. So therefore, it's a klirishon, and it's been directly heated over the fire. Number two, you want the water to be hot there in order for you to bathe in it and be comfortable in it. As opposed to a cup has the opposite. A cup has two reasons for the good to be able to pour cold water into it. Number one, that it's not a klirishon because it's not directly on the fire. And number two, because after you poured into it from the kettle or from something else. You don't want it to be that hot because you want to be able to drink from it. So therefore, there's more reasons to say that it should be mutter. So now, what about a seifel? What about a bucket or a kvort or something that a person uses to pour water over themselves in the bathhouse? Now, on the one hand, it's a cliche. So in that sense, it should be like a cup. But on the other hand, you want the water in it to be fairly hot in order for it to be comfortable when you're pouring it over yourself. So therefore, and it would be absolutely. So therefore, Rav Yosef thought to say that the seifel, that this bucket, is like the bath, and therefore the same dinim would apply, that whatever you're not allowed to do with the bath, you're not allowed to do with the seifel, and therefore the Hillel would say you can't pour cold water into it. Omalei Abaya, so Abaya tells Rav Yosef, no, Toni Rav Chia, seifel ene kaibati. No, actually Rav Chia taught a braita. Tosfos actually, by the way, has a different understanding that the ambati over here we're talking about is that the ambati over here is a cliche. However, Tosfos says that an ambati, the tub, has a very large amount of hot water in it. So therefore, when people see, there's a people think that it's a klirishon, even though it's actually considered a cliche, says Tosfos, because the water comes in here from someplace else. Nevertheless, because there's so much hot water in it, it appears to people like a klirishon. Anyway, the point is that Rav Chia is saying that no, seifel ene kaambati. A bucket like that is not considered like a tub. So according to Beis Hillel, you would be allowed to pour whether you want to pour hot into cold or cold into hot, as long as it's not going to become yad tovah d'tzvoi, then you're okay, because again, it's a klisheni. Klisheni ene mevashel, as we said before, klisheni is not able to cook things, it's not able to boil water that's in it to the point of yad tovah d'tzvoi, because as we learned before, Tosfos points out that the walls of the keli are cooler, and therefore they tend to cool off what's inside it, so therefore that would be mutter. So the question is, Ulamai the Solik Adaita Me'ikr the Seifel Hareo Kambati. But let's revisit Rav Yosef's original thought, his original assumption that the Seifel is like the Ambati, and therefore that the rule would be the same for both of them, that even according to the Silo, you can't pour cold into hot, if we take that view. But Amar Rav Nachman, Allah Rav Shimon ben Menachia, and we would also say that Rav Nachman had said the halacha that Rav Shimon ben Menachia, that you're not allowed to do anything on Shabbos. We're assuming at this point, when Rav Shimon ben Menachia said it's also, it sounds like he means that you're not even allowed to pour hot into cold. So the question is, Ela b'Shabbos yuchitza b'chamin leka? So is there no way that you're allowed to use hot water for washing on Shabbos? Now, when it comes to bathing your whole body or most of it, we talked the other day that you have zeres mechatzos that you're not allowed to. But we also talked about that you have the concept that if you have hot water that was heated up before Shabbos, then on Shabbos you're allowed to wash your face or hands or feet with it. So now the question is, the fact is you don't use hot water directly off the stove for that purpose. You mix that hot water with cold water. If we're going to say the halacha is like a shimma minasya, and we're going to say that even that not only in an ambas, not only in a large tub, are you not allowed to mix cold and hot water together. But if we're going to say, Shimon ben Manasseh is saying that even in a bucket, even in a smaller container, you're not allowed to mix hot with cold, then the only way to do it would be in a cup, in a small cup. Then how is there any way that you'd be able to use hot water to wash your face or hands or feet on Shabbos? So what's going on over here? But wouldn't, in other words, the point is, the Gemara is saying, wouldn't that be reason enough to say that we can't possibly think that a seifel is like an ambasi, which is what Rabbi Yosef wanted to say, until Abaye pointed out to him a bragging to the contrary. But what even made Rabbi Yosef think that? If you think that way, then practically speaking, there's no way to mix hot and cold water on Shabbos and be able to wash any part of your body with hot water on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, the Gemara says, "Mi savret Rav Shimon ha-seifa koi." You think that Rav Shimon, when he says it's author, is referring to the seifa, where this hillel is saying you're allowed to pour hot water into cold water in the ambasi, in the tub, and Rav Shimon Manasseh is coming and saying that's author. No, areisha koi. No, as a matter of fact, Rav Shimon Manasseh is referring to the earlier part of the Braisa. Namely, when we said that we said we had a machlokes b'shama b'tilol, whether when it comes to a cup, whether you're allowed to pour hot into cold or cold into hot, where we said b'shama says that even in a cup, even though a cup is a cliche, even then b'shama said you're not allowed to pour cold into hot because then it's all going to end up heating up more than you're supposed to. And the Tzilul had said you're allowed to pour hot into cold or cold into hot. So then, Reb Shimon ben Manasseh also sternly will say Chamin. Reb Shimon ben Manasseh would be saying, like the Shammai, on the face of it, like the Shammai, that you are not allowed to pour cold into hot, but you would be allowed. But he would say in the Sefer of the Braisa, when we're talking about an Ambasi, then when the Tzilul says you're allowed to pour Chamin, that you're allowed to pour the hot water into the cold water, then Rav Shimon Manasseh would agree with that. So that was why Rav Yosef thought in that case, based on that, if Rav Shimon Manasseh has no and the Tzilul have no problem with pouring hot water into a cold tub, because again the amount of cold water that's in there is not going to allow it to get to Yad Tzilah, even though you're pouring in hot water, and also the cold of the tub is going to overpower, the cold of it rising up is going to overpower the heat that you're pouring into it. So if we say the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Manasseh, very well. So you have a way that's mutter to get lukewarm water on Shabbos to be able to wash yourself. You could do it also, Rav Yosef assumed the same din would apply in a bucket, and there you go. You have a way of getting yourself warm water on Shabbos to be able to wash yourself. But Abaye told him, you don't even need that, because the fact is that even with a bucket, that a bucket, because the cliché is more like a cup in that regard, and that is more like a cup in that regard. Okay. So the question is, Lamer of Shimon Manasseh to Amakar Shammai. In that case, does it mean that Rav Shimon Manasseh is saying like a Shammai? We know that the halacha is almost always like a pillow. So Rav Nachman is hoki paskining like him also. The answer is hoki karma. Okay, what Rav Shimon Manasseh means is Lenach Lekubet Shammai of the Tzilah B'Davazeh. Rav Shimon Manasseh is saying, actually, you Tanakama are telling me that there is a machloikas with Shammai B'Tzilah on this. I'm telling you, says Rav Shimon Manasseh, that actually they don't even argue on it. They both agree that what I'm saying is author is author. And you actually have different Rishonim that argue what exactly does it come out that Rav Shimon Manasseh is saying in that case.
What do they agree and what do they disagree on? According to Rav Shimon ben Menachia,
then there is no machlokes, the Shana Beis Hillel, on this whole topic. This whole topic of cold and hot and cold, Rav Shimon ben Menachia would be saying that the Shana and Beis Hillel are not arguing about it. That this is, when I'm telling you that it's also, I'm telling you that even Beis Hillel would agree that it's also. They never argued over it in the first place. Which means, Tosfos learns that what it means is, again, we're still sticking with our last assumption that in the beginning of the Braisa, that we're going to say like this, that in the beginning of the Braisa, when we had the case of pouring hot into cold in a cup, that we would say that with a cup being a cliche, that we would say if we took Rav Yosef's assumption that a bucket is the same as a cup, then it would mean that it would be also to pour cold water into the hot bucket or into the hot cup. But then we're saying no. Rav Chiya tells us that a bucket and a cup are two different things. Therefore, Rav Shimon Menachia would actually be referring now to the end of the Braisa, saying that when it comes to a tub, are you not allowed to pour hot into cold. But when it comes to a cup or when it comes to a bucket, then he would say it's Moses. And then it would mean, in other words, then the halacha would end up being like that. So the halacha would be that when it comes to a cup or when it comes to a bucket, you would be allowed to pour cold into hot, as long as you're not just pouring in a little bit where it's going to get heated up. Well, no, actually, even if it is, because again, klisheni eini mevashel. We said before, a klisheni is not able to cook things, is not able to heat things to the point of yad tzila, to the point where it would be considered vishal on Shabbos. And we said that, we mentioned before, that water, we see from our Gemara over here, therefore that water is not one of those kalei habishal, it's not one of those things that easily gets cooked in a klisheni, therefore it would be allowed. That's all one way of understanding it. Another way of understanding it, which the Rish and other Rishonim explain, is that we're going to say that Rav Shimon ben Menachia is saying that even in a cup, that you're not allowed to pour cold water into hot water in a cup. And we're saying that then, and we're saying that that Rava is disagreeing with, we said before that Rav Nachman Yitzchak had said the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Menachia. According to this way of understanding it, Rava is going to tell us that the Gemara is going to mention in a second what Rava did, and we're going to see from that Rava didn't hold that like Rav Nachman Yitzchak in that. So therefore, it would come out that the halacha would actually be that it's mutter even in a cup. So there's different ways of understanding what the final halacha is. So let's continue the Gemara. Omer Rav Huna b'Rei Rishua Chazina Leila Rava de Kofid Amana. I saw Rava who was not particular about a cup, about a keli, that he wasn't particular when it comes to a klisheni, whether we're pouring hot into cold or cold into hot. Rava said that either way it's mutter. Midatoni Rav Chiya, because of a braisa that Rav Chiya taught, noisin of kitin shamayim or sefer shamayim, a person is allowed to pour a pitcher of water into a basin and into a bucket of water, bein chamin l'sechtonin or bein chamin l'sechtonin, whether it's hot into cold or cold into hot, because either way it's a cliche. So therefore, so that would be mutter, again, because it's a klisheni and klisheni ain't mevashel. However, the Gemara asks, Amalei Rav Huna le Rav Ashi, Dilma Shani Hosam the Mitzat Keli, but maybe in that case it's a little bit different. The Braisa that you're quoting about pouring a container of water into another container of water, maybe the difference is that there's something separating over there because you have the keli is separating because you have in the case of the braisa you're pouring from a pitcher containing hot water and you're pouring cold water from the pitcher, you're pouring into the hot water that's in the bucket, but you have the walls of the pitcher separate them. But where do we see that you should be allowed to pour directly, not from a pitcher or something, like just be able to pour water from a wider container, let's say, where you don't have anything in the way? The question was like this. When we said noisken adam pitcher in the first statement from Mayim, the assumption is, Rav Huna is asking, who says that that means pouring one into the other? Maybe what it means is you're allowed to take a pitcher of cold water and put it into a container of hot water, which is a cliche. Because again, cliche ni ani mabashal, and since on top of that you have the walls of the inner container are separating the cold water from the hot water, so there's even less heat that's actually going to reach the cold water, and therefore that would be mutter. But how do you know that it's talking about when you're pouring from one into the other, which is what Rava is talking about? The answer is omale ma'aretz. As a matter of fact, the Braisa actually is talking about you're allowed to pour it. We're not talking about putting it into. We're not talking about putting a pitcher of cold water into a container of hot water in order to warm it up. Where then you have the walls of it are separating between them. We're actually talking about pouring from one. The correct version of the Braisa is ma'ara adam kitchen shamayim l'fes seipal shamayim. You're allowed to pour a pitcher of cold water into a bucket of hot water, or either way, whether it's hot into cold or whether it's cold into hot. And therefore, so we see that Rava, so that's what Rava is doing, where we said that Lloyd Kofid Amana, that he's not particular when it comes to a Kaili, which is a cliche, whether you're pouring hot into cold or cold into hot. So the actual halachas in this regard are a little more complicated than we're making them out to be over here, especially again, because you have the different understandings of the Rishonim, what the Gemara meant in the end, whether in the end the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Menasi or not, and what exactly the implications of that are. One thing we do get out of this basically is that according to most opinions, you are actually allowed to pour water into a klisheni, because again, as we said before, klisheni ain't a mevashel. And that's, we talked about this before, that water is not one of those things that kalei habishul. It's not one of those things that gets heated up so easily. Therefore, it's one of those things that you're able to put into a klisheni and not have the problem of, bishul on Shabbos. As opposed to when it comes to other things, you have the concept of kalei habishul. There are certain kinds of things. I was talking about the fish the other day, which easily cook even in a klisheni, and therefore those things you can't put into a klisheni either, unless of course it's below yad tzeledes. So now is a good time, I guess, to revisit that matter of the crouton. So there's a few different considerations involved over here. One thing is, again, part of it depends. According to some poskim, part of the question depends what kind of croutons we're talking about, whether they were fried or whether they were baked. Because if they were fried, then you can say maybe ein bishul acha bishul. But you have, as opposed to if they were baked, then there are opinions in Shulchan Aruch that say that there could be bishul after afiyah. So that's one consideration. But another consideration though is. Is the plate, is the bowl that you have the soup in, is it a klisheni or a klishlishi? There's a valid way of thinking of it, al pi halacha, that the ladle that you usually don't pour directly from the pot into the bowl, you usually use a ladle. So there's an argument that can be made that the ladle then would be considered a klisheni, and then when you pour it into them, then when you pour it, especially because you don't keep it in the pot usually for such a long time at a time. And therefore, when you pour it into the bowl, then the bowl is a klishlishi. And then you'd have no problem with it. Then you'd have no problem with the croutons. So the poskim generally are okay with that, at least with the yellow kind, which as far as I know are fried. Although I saw an interesting article on the OU's website about it, and they said actually if you want to know about a particular kind of croutons, whether it's baked or fried, call the organization that gives the hechsher, the OU or the OK or what have you, and ask them whether the particular one is fried or baked. But if you take the view that the soup bowl is a klishlishi, then you don't have an issue at all. Although there is one more wrinkle in that, which is you also have a concept in halacha that the Maharshal brings up called dover gush, which is sometimes you have a solid object in your soup. You have, for example, let's say you have a potato or a vegetable or whatever, or a large piece of it in your soup. That kind of thing retains heat. even in a Kli Shlishi, even if that means that it's a solid piece, so therefore it retains heat much better than the liquid of the soup, which loses its heat rapidly. So therefore, the Marshal says that if you have, let's say, for example, a potato or some other kind of vegetable in your soup, then that would actually be considered the equivalent of a Kli Rishon or a Kli Sheni. And you do that too, then you can't put the croutons on that, because a Kli Rishon definitely is the Marshal. So you might have that issue. Although again, there is some discussion among the post machronim that maybe we don't have to take on both chumras to say first of all dava gush, and on top of that to have to also say that we should have to also do the chumrah of that there might be bishul acharafia. Maybe not necessarily do we have to do that. So there might be the ability to put the croutons or whatever on the potato. In a similar vein, actually, that Moshe talked about in a truva, by the same token, he says, for example, that you'd be allowed to put ketchup on hot meat on Shabbos in a Kli Shedi for the same reason. Even if you're going to say that the meat is a double gush. But the fact of the matter is the ketchup as part of the process of making it was cooked, and therefore you don't have to be making them both humorous at the same time.
One question: how can you say that a ladle can be considered keli sheni when it dips directly into a keli rishon, even if afterwards it's taken out?
So actually, for many purposes in halacha, we do consider it a kli rishon. However, when it comes to this din that we're dealing with over here of putting it into soup and then putting croutons or salt or whatever into the soup, there's reason to be makel and say that for that purpose only we can consider it like a kli sheni. If you look in Shmiras Shabbos Tzelkos, actually, he makes explicitly that point based on Shulchan Aruch and then the Noisa Kalim on it, that for certain purposes we're going to consider the ladle a kli rishon. And therefore, for example, you wouldn't be able to put salt or spices or what have you, salt actually is something else, but whatever, spices, let's say, into the ladle itself, because for that purpose it would be considered a Kli Rishon. But for the purpose of to consider the bowl that you're eating out of a Kli Shlishi, for that we can be makel and consider the ladle to be a Kli Sheni. So there is that concept. Practical halacha, of course, you have to ask the Rav. In particular, the Alter Rebbe wrote short notes on Hilchas Shabbos, which are printed in the back of the Siddur, called Hilchas Rabsa L'Shabsa, and one of them is about this matter of Bishul Acha Bishul, and the Alter Rebbe mentions certain things we machmir in, so practically speaking, I don't know how much of what we just mentioned is accepted l'halacha by the Alter Rebbe and the Tzemach Tzedek and the other poskim among our Rebbeim. So practically speaking, it's something to ask the Rav. But these are at least the basic concepts behind it. In Shulchan Aruch, by the way, it also talks about salt. You have a whole other issue. Salt is another issue because salt also, there's different kinds of salt. Some of them are cooked, some of them are not. So you have that issue also, again, in Bishul Acha Bishul. So you have, again, to put salt into the pot itself, whether it's on the fire or not, definitely would be osur. Or that's a Kli Rishon. To put it into the ladle, also not. But to put it into the bowl, again, you have reason to say that it's musher. If you find that your soup needs salt, because again, it's a Kli, according to that way of looking at it, it may be a Kli Shlishi plus the fact that a lot of salt is cooked.
I remember my father would tell us if you're putting salt into our soup because it was cooked with a little salt, he would say take a little of soup in your spoon. Put some salt in your spoon, let it dissolve, and then put it into your bowl.
So that's for sure.
Remember something like
that. Yeah, because your spoon, because that's a good way of doing it, because your spoon is unquestionably a Kli Shlishi. Because even if you're going to argue that ladle is still a Kli Rishon and the bowl is a Kli Sheni, definitely your spoon is a Kli Shlishi. Yeah, so that way you're covered no matter what. Yeah, exactly.
Right. One other question. In layman's thinking, bishul is usually on a fire.
Right.
So that's the definition d'oraisa, or and you can do bishul outside of a fire?
No. We talked the other day, earlier in our parak, we talked about the concept of toldei ta'ur, when you have something that is heated by the fire, and you're going to be using that to cook something else, and we actually said it's also d'oraisa. So therefore, to cook something in a Kli Rishon would actually be also d'oraisa. okay, maybe you could distinguish between whether the Kli Rishon is still on the fire or whether it's off the fire. I'm not sure about
that's
that.
That's right. My question.
Okay, so that maybe there would be a distinction. I'm not sure about that. But in any case, when it's on the fire, then definitely, even though you're not cooking it directly with the heat of the fire, you're cooking it with the content of the pot. Nevertheless, that would be also daraisa. But again, we talked the other day, for example, about you put an egg next to a hot kettle in order to cook it, and you said chayav chachos, and then the pashtos, and then no, actually, so there, we're talking about even when the kettle was off the fire, the pashtos. So there you go. Then we're talking about that even a Kli Rishon which is off the fire. Yeah.
So where did the Poskim take it that Bishul is applicable outside of a fire, away from a fire? Where did they take that from?
Because we're seeing in the Gemara over here that a Kli Rishon is still considered cooking. Only when it comes to a Kli Sheni do we talk about it. Now again, we mentioned the other day in the Gemara about this koya spunin, this kind of fish that has a very soft skin, and therefore just rinsing and just pouring hot water on it is enough to cook it, and therefore you're also to do that on Shabbos. That is an example of a Kli Sheni. So we see that there are certain things that can be cooked even in a Kli Sheni. We're going to have that's a Mishnah that we're going to have later on in our Masechta, but we quoted it briefly before on Daf Lamed Tes. Certain other things can only be cooked in a Kli Rishon, and we see from our Gemara over here that water is one of them. We learned the other day in the Gemara that oil is another one of them.
Yes, but a Kli Rishon doesn't necessarily have to be sitting on a fire.
But even a Kli Rishon that was taken off the fire, as long as it still has its heat, then cooking in it, we're saying, would still be osur. Maybe daraisa, maybe derabanan. I think.
That's my question.
Okay, it seems to be that the consensus is daraisa as well. Again, because it's tolbe sa'ur, because it was heated up directly by the fire, and it still retains that heat. And therefore it would still be considered cooking.
So the conclusion would be that you can have bishul without a fire, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. As long as it was heated up originally by a fire. Now, if it's not something that was heated up originally by a fire, we talked about the other day. We talked about the hot springs of Tiberia. We talked about something that was heated up in the sun or whatever. There you have different in it. But when you talk about something that was heated up by the fire, even though now it's also fire, yes, it's capable of cooking. And to the extent that a person would be also to do it on Shabbos and Chayav Daraisa. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. The Mishnah.
So one second, just before we move on. So yes. an electric stove where there is no fire, there's just heat. Is that bishul or not?
Okay, so here you get into the general question of whether electricity is considered fire lahalacha. You have when electric appliances were invented 130 or so years ago, 140 years ago, the poskim started dealing with this question. You actually had some poskim who allowed the use of electricity on Shabbos, but the consensus of poskim was not, on various grounds, whether because of mavir, which is making a fire, because it is similar to a fire, and after all, you have a glowing filament over there. Now, we mentioned before, we mentioned gachelas shomasas, a glowing piece of metal. We said that maybe it's only, maybe putting it out is only also drabanon, but there is an argument to be made that lighting it would actually be also daraisa. And then there were various other grounds, and in particular, as famously, Rav Shlomo Zalman Oyerbach said that the problem with completing an electrical circuit is boine, like a building. Anyway, the point is, when it comes to cooking, yeah, we said the one thing we mentioned the other day when we were talking about cooking in the sun, Rashi had made a point over there that one reason why it might not be also daraisa is because it's not a normal way of cooking. Now, cooking on an electric stove is very much nowadays a normal way of cooking. Therefore, it would definitely be also and very like and most likely daraisa as well. Especially again, on top of that, if we say that electricity is actually considered fire lahalacha, and you have many poskim who say that, which is after all, I mean, we all know from when we're little kids that you can't turn on lights, you can't turn on and off lights on Shabbos. And the most straightforward way to understand it is the same way as you're not allowed to light a fire or extinguish a fire on Shabbos. So therefore, looking at it that way, electricity would actually be considered fire lahalacha, and therefore cooking in it would be the same thing. Would be also on a daraisa level.
My parents of Florida, there's no option. There's only electric. they don't have regular gas.
Right.
That's how they cook. You know?
Yeah. So that's the thing. So according to that way of looking at it, that the only reason to say that's potter when it comes to the sun is because cooking in the sun is not a normal thing, but you can't say that about electricity. Plus, if electricity is fire, la halacha, then there you go. The same way as you can't cook with fire on Shabbos, the same way you can't cook with electricity. We talked about briefly the other day the question of a microwave, whether that would also be also daraisa. One point that we mentioned that I think Moshe makes is, again, it depends on whether it's a normal way or not. Nowadays, microwaves are a very normal way of cooking. Then, according to Rashi's way of looking at it, at least, it would be also daraisa because, again, it's now a normal way of cooking. Okay.
You can cook with a laser, and you're not going to say the laser is a fire.
Maybe, maybe not, but at least cooking with a laser is not a usual thing that people do. So maybe
okay, let's assume it is usual. It's still not a fire.
Maybe, maybe not. But even if we say that not, again, microwaves are not fire either, but nevertheless, you could argue once it becomes a normal way of cooking, then it might be also the same way. At least it would be also derabanan, and it might well be also daraisa again, because you can't say it's like toldos hachama that we discussed the other day, which would only be also derabanan, which is not even a normal way of cooking. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. The Mishnah says ha'ilpas v'akgeira, a pan full of food or a pot full of food. She has viron merutachin, where you took it off the fire. You took it off the fire right before Shabbos, and it's still right as Shabbos is beginning. So bein hashmoshes, and it's very hot from the fire. Lo yitem l'seicham tavlin. You're not allowed to put spices into that pan or into that pot because again, it's a kli rishon, and it's a kli rishon, and it's going to cook the spices. But you would be allowed to put spices into a plate or into a serving dish because those are a klisheni. And again, klisheni ain't a mevashel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lakol hu noisin. Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to put spices into anything, chot midavash yesh bechoymet batsir, unless you have food that contains in it vinegar or fish juice, because those kinds of things, the sharpness of the vinegar or the fish juice, cause the hot water or the hot food to cook the spices. Rabbi Yehuda would say that Rabbi Yehuda would say that would be an exception, if it doesn't have those ingredients, then Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's like any other cliche. You have also, by the way, when we're talking about over here, there are details over here. Again, you have the matter of Java Gush, that if you have solid items in the, that if you have solid items in the food, then it's not so simple to put spices in, because then the Java Gush, as the Maharshal says, still retains its heat. You also have, in any case, spices are not previously cooked, so you have a real issue of visual with them. You also have, for example, you can't put in the spices or what have you first and then pour the soup over them because from the kli rishon, because as Rashi points out, iruy from kli rishon would still be considered kli rishon, so then it would be considered to cook them. So again, you have relevant dinim in this connection. You can't put spices into the kli rishon. In Shulchan Aruch it says even if the kli rishon is not yadsela disloy, it's better to be careful and not put spices in it because of a hachaka in order to keep away far from the kisur. Salt you would be able to put in, as we're going to see in the Gemara. We're going to see that salt is also a machlokas, but wait. You can't put spices into a bowl and pour on it from the kli rishon, because then again you'd have a problem. But you would be allowed to put as far as a kli sheni, then you have other issues. Then you get into the question of to what extent can a kli sheni cook, because then you get into the question again of whether spices are considered kali habishul. Okay. So the most important, Rabbi Yehuda, Areisha Koli or the Kula, Which part of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda referring to when he mentions the part about vinegar or fish juice, that those make a difference? Is he referring to the Reisha, and he being Makel, where the Tanakhama had said that if you take a pot off the fire, you can't put spices in it, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying you're allowed to as long as it doesn't contain vinegar or fish juice? Or is he referring to the Sefer, I mean Machmer, where the Tanakhama is saying you're allowed to put spices into a bowl or into a serving tray, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying not if the food contains vinegar or fish juice? The Toshma, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to put spices into any kind of pan, and you're allowed to put spices into any kind of pot, even if a pot is boiling, unless the food that you're putting the spices into contains vinegar or fish juice. So you see clearly that Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to put the spices into a kli rishon, as long as the kli rishon doesn't contain vinegar or fish juice, because again, he would say spices are not the kind of thing that gets cooked that easily, and therefore, you'd be allowed to. Now, actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it says it's not so simple. First of all, in the halacha is like a Tanakhama, but second of all, the spices that they had in those days are not necessarily like the ones they have nowadays. They didn't necessarily grind it nowadays. When you think of spices, you think of like small flakes or small small powders or flakes or whatever, like oregano or onion flakes or onion powder or whatever. The spices they had in those times in the Gemara were not necessarily, they would grind them up like that. They could put them in a hole. So therefore, maybe those kinds of things don't cook as easily, as opposed to spices that are ground up or powdered, as we usually have them nowadays, could be the kind of things that cook more easily, and therefore you'd have an issue even putting them, you might even have an issue putting them into a kli chain, like we were discussing before. Okay. Now let's talk about salt. Sovereign of Yosef, the name of Melach Haleo Ketanen, Rabbi Yosef thought to say that salt is like spices in that regard. Is a kli rishon boshla or a kli sheni loy boshla, that it would cook in a kli rishon, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to put salt into a kli rishon, but you'd be allowed to put it into a kli sheni. Amalei Abaye, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, no. Toni Rav Chia taught a braisa, melach ena ketavlin, salt is not like spices, did a kli sheni nami boshla. As a matter of fact, salt cooks even in a kli sheni. Therefore, you can't put salt even into a kli sheni. However, the Gemara says a pligah de Rav Nachman. In that case, that braisa and that statement of Abayas disagrees with what Rav Nachman says. The Amar Rav Nachman, tzricha milcha bishula kibisla b'torah, because Rav Nachman said that salt is the kind of thing that needs so much cooking, like the meat of an ox. The meat of an ox, the beef, is very tough. And it takes a lot of cooking. And the same way, Rav Nachman said that salt is the same kind of thing. Therefore, actually, Rav Nachman would say that actually that salt would not even cook even in a kli rishon once the kli rishon was taken off the fire. Because even you put in a piece of meat, you put in a piece of beef into a kli rishon that's off the fire, it's not going to cook. And Rav Nachman is saying salt is the same kind of thing. So according to him, you would be allowed to put salt into a kli rishon that was off the fire. But we're saying that Abaye is telling us, that Rav Chia is telling us that no, on the contrary, you can't put salt even into a cliche. The Ikadami, another version of the Machlokas, of the discussion, goes the other way around. Sovereign of Yosef, the name of Melach Harehu Ketavlin, Rav Yosef thought to say that salt is like spices, the Beklirishin Boshla, the Klisheni Loi Boshla, that only in a Klirishin does it cook, but in a Klisheni not, because we see in our Mishnah that Tanakhama allows you to put salt to put spices into a klisheni. Again, unground spices we may be talking about, but still, that he allows you to put them into a klisheni. So Rav Yosef thought salt is the same thing. You'd be allowed to put it into a klisheni. Amalei Abaye, Tonin Rav Chia, Melach Ena Ketavlin. However, Abaye tells him that Rav Chia taught Braisa, no, salt is not like spices. They were klirishin namalei boshla. That, in fact, salt won't even cook in a klirishin, unlike spices, which will. And Bahainu, the Amr of Nachman, which is like what Rav Nachman said, Sricha Milcha Bishula Kibisra de Torah, that salt needs as much cooking as the meat of an ox, as beef, and therefore that would be allowed even in a Kli Rishon. Now, you have a machlokes haposkim, which version is the halacha like? Is the halacha in the end that you're allowed to put salt into a kli rishon, or is as long as it's not on the fire, or is the halacha that you can't even put it in a kli shein? So in Shulchan Aruch it meant, so in Shulchan Aruch the Mechaber Paskins like the second version, that you're allowed to put salt even into a kli rishon that's off the fire, because again, salt is not one of those kalei habdishol, it's not one of those things that cook easily, as we see Rav Nachman is saying, it takes a lot of cooking to get it to cook. On the other hand, that Amar says, because you have the other opinion that salt can cook in a kli sheni, which is the first version of the Gemara, then that Amar says it's better to be machmir, tovei olav bracha, which would therefore amount to that you can't put salt into a kli sheni either. Again, when the salt is cooked, in principle there should be a difference. Because ein bishul acha bishul. However, the Alter Rebbe talks over there in Hilchot Rabbis of Shabbos, in his short notes on Hilchot Shabbos over there, that given that the salt dissolves, then you're back to the same problem, that ein bishul acha bishul only applies when it's a double lach and remains double lach, only when it's a liquid and it remains a liquid, not like in this case where it's a solid and then becomes a liquid. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe says that the Alter Rebbe actually talks over there about putting, the Alter Rebbe talks about salt and about sugar, that since they dissolve, then you still have a problem of bishul. So the bottom line is, the Alter Rebbe says, you shouldn't eat, because the Amar says, the machmer, even with salt, even in a kli sheni, therefore you shouldn't be putting salt even into a kli sheni. So again, as we discussed before, a soup bowl might be considered a kli shlishi, might not. If you put the salt, as Eli was saying, as his father, should live and be well, where he puts the salt into the spoon and then into the soup, then for sure you're good, because a spoon is definitely a kli shlishi. So that's the gist of it, Ed.
But salt, the issue is something that burns. Salt doesn't burn, it dissolves. Or it melts, but it doesn't burn.
One second. Who said that bishul was burning? Heating up water. Water doesn't burn, but heating up water to add to lettuce by is cooking. No, you're confusing two different
boiling things. Boiling is...
One second. There's a malacha of mavir, which is to make a fire, which is to burn something in a fire. That's one of the 39 malachas. A separate malacha is mevashel, which is cooking. And cooking...
What is cooking exactly? Is it burning or is it boiling?
Cooking, generally speaking, we're saying involves, part of it involves bringing something up to the temperature of Yad Tzilah, but also we're talking about the idea that it has to be that it causes some transformation in the object, not necessarily burning, but for example, hot water feels different. It feels that hot water, especially when it vaporizes, feels and looks different than cold water. And the same thing with other things. We talked about the other day, the Gemara had brought an opinion of Rabba and Rav Yosef that oil, for example, is not subject to bishul, because oil doesn't really look any different. Oil is not really any different after you boil it than before it. But we said that's not the halacha. The halacha is that bishul does apply to oil. So the definition of bishul is where you're heating up of food and changing its state even temporarily. So even, for example, water after it's cooled off is the same as it was when it was cold, but nevertheless, when you're heating it up, it's bishul. And obviously you have some things where when you heat like an egg, for example, you heat them up and they change state and never unchange. So all those kinds of things would be considered bishul. What we're talking about here about salt is, we're not saying that salt, that bishul doesn't apply to salt. What we're saying is that we have a machloikas, we have it based on the two versions of the Gemara over here, whether salt is one of those kinds of things that the process of cooking it, what would be considered cooking in halacha, is not capable of happening even in a kli rishon off the fire, because even a kli rishon that's off the fire, it still has enough heat in it. That heat would not be enough to cook salt, just as it wouldn't be enough to cook a piece of beef that you put in it. Or do we say that not? Do we say, on the contrary, that salt is something that can be considered cooked, that what happens there is considered bishul, even in the lesser heat of a kli sheni? So again, that's the machlokes, the poskim that you have on that, and therefore you end up with the question of whether you are allowed to put salt in a pot once it was taken off the fire, which is what the machaber would say, or that Amar is saying it's better to be machmir and not put salt even into a cliché.
But since you're talking about transformation, you can transform salt by dissolving it in a cold amount.
That's fine, but obviously that's not bishul. There's no particular malachah.
Why is it so obvious then?
Because it's obvious. Bishul involves heat. By definition, bishul involves heat. So it's
so.
So that's it. So therefore, so if you don't have heat involved, then there's nothing to talk about bishul. Now, depending on the material, there could be other malachas involved, sure, but we're not getting into that right now. For example, we talked about previously that you have, for example, we talked about in the first paragraph, you have, for example, dye materials that you soak in water. And there the problem is that you have, Rashi had said over there, you have a malacha of lush because they join up together. They make it more viscous and they make a thick mixture. And therefore you're mixing it on Shabbos and you have a problem of megabel. So you have that kind of thing when you're putting thicker things into water. Then fine, you have a different issue involved. But when you're talking about salt, it doesn't join together like that to make something that would be needable basically. So therefore, if you're just putting it into cold water, then there's no. If you're just putting it into a cold drink, that or cold whatever, then there's no problem with it. All right.
Well, you can say the same thing about metal then. When you heat it up, it melts, just like salt.
And you're not allowed to heat up metal on Shabbos, and that's a tool of mevashel. Heating up metal would be a tool of mevashel, sure.
But it's not mevashel; it's a tool of mevashel.
It's a tool of mevashel, fine, because the malacha and the mishkan involved preparing the malacha of oifa, baking or cooking or whatever. And the mishkan involved organic materials, involved dye stuffs and whatever that they use for the mishkan. So melting metal would be a tool of that. Either way, it doesn't really matter. A tool is also daraisa as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll continue. We'll start the next.